Hey, this is Stephen Curry from the Golden State Warriors, number 30. And you listen to Drive Time Sports on KOAL 750 AM.
It's gone down as one of the most active NBA trade deadlines in the history of the league. I mean, typically, we talk about the deadline, we talk about what-ifs, and it's kind of a snooze fest, but the deadline is now come and gone, and the activity yesterday was off the charts. Activity today was off the charts, and so there is plenty to talk about. Because there's so much to talk about, we get to bring in James Holas once again. We typically only hear from James once a week. We're blessed this week. We get him on the airwaves twice. James, appreciate you making time here on this hectic NBA Thursday.
I appreciate you having me on, bro. My DMs were going off when everyone said that they couldn't make your show. So like 16 people were like, oh, I can't make it. Do you mind doing it? And I get it. I'm 16th down, but I'll take it. I appreciate it.
Nonsense. We love getting you on. Love hearing the insight. And I know yesterday, I mean, it was crazy to begin with. So we get on the air yesterday. It wasn't official yet, but it appeared that the framework of the three-team deal between the Lakers, Jazz, and Timberwolves was all but done. We were just waiting on some draft pick compensation. And, James, I know you're going to echo what I say here. The Lakers actually did pretty well yesterday, moving on from Westbrook, Juan Toscano-Anderson, Damian Jones, just one of the two first-round picks they have in 2027 and 2029. It's even heavily top-four protected, which is great for this team. And they get D'Angelo Russell, Malik Beasley, and Jared Vanderbilt back. The Jazz move on from Mike Conley. And they get another first-round pick. So I believe between now and 2029, the Jazz have 15 first-rounders. Curious to see what Danny Ainge does with that. Bottom line, this three-team deal, the Lakers, they're big winners here.
They are. The Lakers have been kind of the butt of jokes for the roster construction all year. Now they have a team that's deeper. They added shooting. They added defense. They just added some quality role guys. So you're not, you know, giving big minutes to guys like, important minutes to a guy like Max Christie. Max Christie, that's the name, right?
Yeah, Max Christie, correct, yep.
Yeah, and, you know, Austin Reaves is a nice young player. He shouldn't be getting key crunch time minutes right now. So they actually got some vets who can really help. And I think, you know, when you talk about this off the air a little bit, like, sure, you can knock them for not making the Indiana move and bringing in Miles Turner and Buddy Hield, because I think the season goes completely different if they're there all year. But the Lakers, like you said, kept one of the first rounders. And, you know, they definitely made, out of maybe almost all the teams in the West outside of Phoenix, and even with Phoenix, as far as the magnitude of improvement, they probably improved the most.
The Lakers in this deal, D'Angelo is a pretty interesting guy, considering the fact that he's unrestricted at the end of the season. Lakers can offer him, a two-year, $65 million deal, something around that length in the offseason. He'll be a sign-and-trade candidate. Is this a long-term deal for the Lakers? When you look at D'Angelo Russell, I mean, is this just a contingency plan if they can't bring in Kyrie Irving in the offseason? Because, James, I'm still floored that they didn't get Kyrie. When you see the way the trade deadline kind of panned out, I mean, it must have just been Brooklyn not wanting to trade Kyrie to L.A. This right here tells me it's a contingency plan, but also maybe it's plan A and bringing Kyrie in the summer, or am I reading too much into this?
I'm going to push back because I think the package they got from Utah is better than freaking Pat Beverly and Russell Westbrook and like Austin Reaves and Max Christie. Like they got some real deal, two decent starter border, like rotation guys, and you know, they got a handful of picks. So, I got to say, I don't think it's personal as maybe some Lakers fans feel it is. I definitely think they, you know, part of it was they're like, well, we're not going to just acquiesce to them. And they would have probably maybe tried to pump a little bit more out of the Lakers than the Lakers would have wanted to pay. But that's what happens when you got a player of Kyrie's caliber. So, I definitely don't think it was a personal thing. I think the Nets, as we saw, they made a huge pivot. And their thing was about, getting some valuable guys who can get them maybe first-rounders down the road somewhere and getting some picks. So, yeah, the Nets, they're in full-blown rebuild mode here soon.
We'll talk about the Timberwolves. It's a team that had to do something. I mean, they depleted themselves of assets in the Rudy Gobert deal, which we can, again, make reference to here in a moment when we start talking about Phoenix. But they have to do something. They move on from D'Angelo Russell. They get Mike Conley. They get Nikhil Alexander-Walker. They get a couple of picks as well. When you look at Conley now being added to the equation, does that do enough to move the needle for you to say, okay, Minnesota maybe solidifies himself as a top five, top six team of the Western Conference, or is this a head scratcher for you as well, considering that D'Angelo Russell had actually played some pretty good basketball as of late?
D'Angelo Russell is also going to be a free agent this summer, and as we know, he's not a bum, so he's going to want a pretty decent contract. He probably is going to want some kind of security, so maybe some long term. After making max money and then near max money again, it's a player who's not, he's still in his prime. He's not going to take $12 million. He thinks it's worth more than that. So with the evolution of Anthony Edwards, you've got two big max contract big men that you have to feed, and they're getting paid. It doesn't make sense for them to keep a guy like D'Angelo Russell. So my feeling is that the Timberwolves really said, hey, he's not really part of our core moving forward. Let's try to get something for him. A guy like Conley could probably be had a lot cheaper next season, and Conley is a caretaker, an organizer, much more of a pure point guard than D'Angelo Russell. Makes a little more sense with this roster. So I think it was a good move for them.
And then you have Utah. They just try to accumulate picks. Malik Beasley next year, it's a team option. Lakers will decline that $15.5 million, I believe is what it is. Jared Vanderbilt, fine piece. I mean, Utah, essentially in this, they bought another first-round pick. That's what they did.
And that Utah, again, like you said, I think they're still trying to kind of walk that thin line. They have a guy like Markkanen and, some of the young big men they have there, Walker Kessler. Either way, they're collecting young talent and who can also be moved down the road. And like you said, asset collection. And that treasure trove of first and second round picks is tremendous right now. And we know that's what Ainge wants to do. He wants to keep flexibility as far as what he can package some of these young players and picks. He's going to have salary cap space. Like, it's all about being able to pivot. And right now, I think they saw they weren't the team that they started off as to start the season, right? They weren't going to be amongst the top of the West. So it definitely made a kind of pivot to keep keeping their knees flexible.
Again, James Hollis, our guest right now, as we talk about the NBA trade deadline. James, last night, it's about, I don't even know, it was like 10, 10:30 last night, news breaks that the Brooklyn Nets have now officially moved on from their big three. They trade Kevin Durant to the Phoenix Suns, Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson, Jay Crowder, four unprotected first-round picks. What was your initial thought when you saw this deal come through the wire last night?
Me and JP had just wrapped up a new episode of Dunk Tales where we talked about all the trades that had went down up to that point. And we just wrapped up, and I started editing it, and my phone goes off, and I throw my hands up because, that's definitely a landscape shifter. The Suns have been kind of like, not life support, but they definitely had been trending downwards. The weirdness between Ayton and the front office and Crowder not showing up and now Chris Paul and Devin Booker were injured, and they really spiraled going from, one of the best teams in the West to towards the bottom. Devin Booker's back. You bring in a guy like Kevin Durant, who we know is going to be healthy here again soon, still a top five type guy. Chris Paul has been looking better than he did earlier this season. Sure, they give a lot of depth. They also, a sneaky move in that was the T.J. Warren, coming over with Kevin Durant. DeAndre Ayton is in town, and now you got more talent around him to open up the floor. The Suns might have kind of hit reset instead of hitting reload, and they look like they're going to be there. Other than Denver right now, I think they kind of rocketed to the top of contenders out West.
I agree. I mean, I love what the Nuggets did. We can talk about that. They added some depth pieces today. But in my mind, James, when I take a look at the Western Conference, I honestly believe on paper, and that's big. That's a big thing, right? We got to look at locker room chemistry. But if healthy, I have a hard time believing someone's going to best this Phoenix Sun team four times in a seven-game set.
We heard the same thing last year with Kyrie and KD. It's no matter what the talent on the floor says, it's all about matchups, and chemistry plays such a huge part in it. We know Kevin Durant is chomping at the bit to prove last year was a fluke. We know Devin Booker wants to prove something after the way they went out last year. We know Chris Paul hears the whispers. So, yeah, I definitely think that if Kevin Durant and Devin Booker and Chris Paul and DeAndre Ayton can be on the floor and they can put, a body on the floor with them at all times, a warm body that isn't going to just throw the ball to the stands, they're going to be really tough to beat. My big thing with them is going to be chemistry, because they only have 30 games to kind of build that kind of rapport you kind of need to be a team that goes deep in the playoffs.
With Phoenix, though, I think this is important to mention. You go back to the failed negotiations with the Brooklyn Nets where they tried to acquire Kyrie Irving in a deal that caught a lot of media attention. If it was going to be Chris Paul and Jay Crowder for Kyrie Irving, this is a team, new ownership. They were going to play aggressive. This is why I love this right here. You got someone that buys a team. First thing he tries to do, tries to get Kyrie, tries to get off the Chris Paul deal. That didn't make sense. Okay, guess what? We're going to call Brooklyn back. What do we have to do to get Kevin Durant? I love aggressiveness, and I think as a fan of the game or a fan of a team, all you can ask for is that your ownership and your front office has one thing in mind, winning. No question, new ownership in Phoenix, they want to win, James.
Absolutely. By all reports, they have been kind of haggling over some of the, you know, Mikal Bridges, the picks, and they started pivoting towards looking at other moves, you know, and their new owner came in and says, nope, let's make this happen. Let's get on the phone about Kevin Durant. I've never heard of something like that where it turned around so quickly and it all kind of came together. And, yeah, it's one thing to stash assets and draft quality guys, and you want to make sure, again, flexibility. And then it's another thing when you finally have you can strike while the iron is hot and you just push all the chips in the middle of the table. And they did that, but it's not even like a high risk, right? Because Kevin Durant is still Kevin Durant. Chris Paul has shown he can perform as long as he has guys around him, and now he has two of the best scorers in the league the past two. This is going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, anytime someone tells me, well, you gave up too many draft picks. Look, the Rudy Gobert deal, you can make that case. They gave up too many draft picks. You acquire someone like Kevin Durant, one of the most unique scorers the game has ever seen, I'd trade 10 draft picks. I wouldn't even hesitate.
Yeah, and looking at what Kevin Durant just got, it shows you how ridiculous the Rudy Gobert trade is. And unless the Wolves win a championship in his tenure, then we're going to say it's one of the worst trades ever. I don't. They could win the West. If they don't win a championship after the capital they gave up, both personnel and draft, then because they gave up more than they gave up for Kevin Durant just now. It's ridiculous. But yeah, I'm with you. When you got a guy in his prime like Devin Booker and Chris Paul in his twilight years, and you get a chance to get a guy like Kevin Durant who's going to be a top five type guy for at least the next 3-4 years with the way he shoots. As long as he can stay healthy, it's almost a no-brainer.
Absolutely. Hands down. There are a couple of names that I am a little surprised that we're not on the move. What being Zach LaVine? I really thought when we saw all the activity going down, typically it leads to bigger deals. I know the New York Knicks were hot on the idea of adding Zach LaVine, and they did not get him. Chicago stands put. This does surprise me a little bit.
Yeah, I'm really surprised that Chicago didn't make a franchise kind of altering move. Because they're definitely toiling in the doldrums. Even at their best, sure, on any given night during the regular season, on a Thursday in January, they could beat anyone. But we've seen it. They don't have a modern offense. They're clunky. Their defense has been porous. I don't know why you would keep three guys like Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan and Vucevic together, because you're not scaring anyone. It's been kind of sad to watch this year. So all you can do is kind of scratch your head. Chicago went all in a year and a half ago, and it just hasn't. They crapped out.
James, we talked about the two marquee deals, Lakers, Jazz, T-Wolves, Suns, Nets. There's been so many smaller deals out there. I mean, the Clippers go out, they get some shooting, they add Eric Gordon. There's a million deals that you and I can talk about. Which one caught your attention that we haven't discussed yet?
It's definitely the couple moves the Clippers did. They did it. They tried it with Reggie Jackson, and they kind of hobbled along and got it done. He's not a point guard. John Wall didn't work out, and they swallowed that pill quickly. I like what they brought in a guy like Eric Gordon, who can run some point, tough defender when he wants to be, he can shoot, and they got Plumlee out of Charlotte. They've long needed a backup big man, and those are small moves, but to me, on a team that already had at every position had a lot of depth, they kind of shored up and bolstered their perimeter, and they added a big man. And with Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, they've been playing really well lately. They have a bad loss here and there. I think they kind of maybe papered over some of their deficiencies.
Milwaukee acquires Jay Crowder. 5 second-round picks, I believe, is what they give up for Crowder, if I'm not mistaken. Turned out to be a little bit of a bigger deal. Nonetheless, that was a guy I know that you were hoping to land in Boston.
I would have loved to have him in Boston. And let's also, as an aside, they also the Golden State Warriors just got 5 second-round picks for James Wiseman. Oh, how the mighty have fallen, the mighty being Wiseman here. But, Crowder is a great pickup for Milwaukee. I think a lot like the Clippers, they are, you know, except the Golden, I mean, obviously the Bucks are more proven. They've won the championship with their core. But they also have the system. They have the continuity. And adding a guy like Crowder, he can play power forward. He's going to play a little bit of small forward. He doesn't need the ball. He's the one to catch and shoot. He has a good motor. That's why the whole thing with the Suns is so weird. He's very much a competitor, and you wouldn't expect that from him. But he can play a huge role for a team like Milwaukee. He can play the role that Serge is supposed to, the KG vet that can maybe win you a game with a couple of key three pointers.
Who's the biggest loser in your mind over the last 48 hours?
It's got to be the Nets. It's got to be the Nets, man. The Nets, at one point, they got, you know, over the last 3.5 years or whatever, almost 4 years, they got 16 games out of Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and James Harden. They had 16 games. At one point, people were wondering how many championships in a row are they going to win in the East. And Kyrie Irving was a constant distraction, and all three of those stars requested a trade and got out of town on the first thing smoking. So if we want to say the biggest loser is going to be the Nets, and the real biggest loser, it's Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons went from an all-star, all-NBA type player, and now he's left on a team that looks like it's ready to tank.
Yeah, no question. I agree with you. I would agree with Brooklyn. You and I did talk on Monday about the buyout market. Great place to end. We know Serge Ibaka is a guy you and I talked about on Monday. He is going to be waived. He'll be a part of the buyout market. Russell Westbrook, we assume, will be. I don't believe he ever steps foot in the state of Utah. And then outside of that, you can add John Wall to it, right? Another name that you and I did talk about on Monday. You came to the you said that Serge Ibaka was going to be the guy who was the most lightly used, could make an impact on a contending team immediately if he was to hit the buyout market. You still feel that way here today now that we've seen things and the way it's unfolded?
I definitely do. I'm still not – I just feel bad for Russ and John Wall. They have all the heart, and, like, their brain is telling them that they're still, you know, really productive winning players, and the game on the court doesn't back that up. Reggie Jackson, I think he has more use than those two, so if he gets bought out in Charlotte, he can probably – hit a contender if he's willing to take 15 minutes a night. But I still think Serge, 10, 15 minutes a night, he's going to get a key block. He can hit a key three-pointer. It's weird how it ended in Milwaukee because I thought he'd be a great fit there. He just was out of the rotation at the end. I was actually kind of hoping Boston, you know, waited and picked him up versus getting a guy like Muscala. But, I definitely think Serge can be that guy.
James, I'm glad you pointed that out with John Wall and Russell Westbrook. I know there's been a lot of jokes about Westbrook. Let me just say this. When I watch Russ play basketball, there is never a second where I doubt the effort, where I doubt the heart, and I doubt the killer instinct. Right? And I know that doesn't necessarily translate into wins. It doesn't necessarily translate into efficient play. But I'll tell you, man, I do respect that with Russ. I've never had to question that. As much Laker basketball as I watch, there was not a single time this season or last season where I looked at Russ and said, this guy's not even trying. Now, I don't know what that means in the locker room. There's reports. I mean, he's a vampire was the term that was used today. I get all that. However, I go back to it. This guy plays with heart, man. I got to give him credit.
Yeah, but again, Blake Griffin is a good example, and it's a little different because he physically is eroded so much, and he knows it. But he humbles himself, and he knows, if I want to be part of a winning coaching team, I have to do the little things, and I can't do the big things. I am no longer the guy who can suck up all the oxygen in the room. And he knows that, and that's why it's really tough. I think John Wall is further along in that process than Westbrook is, but Westbrook still sees himself as a premium, high-tier player. And he looks so much like the part, but it's called the uncanny valley, where the closer you get to elite, the closer you get to real, the more grotesque the differences are. So we see Westbrook's flaws are more and more pronounced because he's not quite that guy, but he still wants to be that guy. And that's it's sad to see, because if he could just kind of humble himself, I hate saying that. I don't think he's arrogant, but if he could actually kind of see himself a little more realistically, he could still help a team. He just can't do that.
James Holis, again, half of the Dunk Tales Pod. Follow him on Twitter, at Snotty Drippin'. James, before I let you go, tell us about the Dunk Tales Pod, man. It's always great stuff.
You know what, man? I wish we had your work ethic and we had your determination and your organization, because we dropped the pod today. It's our first one in like a month. We're supposed to be a weekly pod, but life gets in the way. I think we're going to pick up more as the second half of the season comes on, but it's just me and my buddy JP. Check us out, all streaming platforms, The Dunk Tales, TALES. And, let us know what you think.
Love it, James. Thank you again for the time. Can't wait to catch up next week.
Thank you, brother.
We're going to pause one more time. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. It's here on 107.3 FM and 7:50 a.m.